So I'm Megan Key. I'm a social worker at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York, and I've been working in the PACT program at Mount Sinai since September 2010, since we started. I'm here to talk to you about our program, and it's designed to reduce preventable readmissions to the hospital. Okay, so just some overview. Mount Sinai Medical Center is a just under 1,200-bed teaching hospital located in the East Harlem community. East Harlem serves a wide variety of people, both culturally and socially, economically. We have just under 60,000 discharges in 2011, so we have tons of discharges here. It's a huge hospital in New York. Readmissions, as people might know now, are unplanned and often unnecessary readmissions, cost Medicare billions of dollars per year. And the Affordable Care Act, which was recently introduced, includes penalties for hospitals with high readmission rates. Historically, in New York, Mount Sinai, because of the community we serve, has extremely high readmission rates. So in 2010, in response to this, we began to look at programs to reduce readmissions, and PACT was the program that got funding, and it's one of the few original social work readmission initiatives in the country. So PACT was created in the summer of 2010 and was aimed at reducing the preventable readmissions among the highest risk patients. It's a 5-week social work intervention beginning during their hospitalization, and we identify specific goals with patients and families and provide resources and try to organize their care. There's three components of PACT: the PACT social workers, the IMA PACT clinic, and PACT volunteers. Starting with the PACT social workers, we began in September 2010, and there were 4 licensed master social workers. I was one of them. We performed 75-minute enhanced inpatient assessment, which I'll go into a little more later, and then post-discharge transitional services for high-risk patients. There are 2 ways we can identify patients that are appropriate for the program. The first is we get a daily high-risk report of all the patients in the hospital who have more than 1 readmission within 30 days or 2 within 6 months. So if you have a history of readmission, you're considered appropriate for the program. The second is direct provider referrals. The inpatient team, the doctors or nurses, they'll refer to us and ask us to look into the patient because they are high risk for readmission. The identification of them always includes that pre-assessment consultation with the primary care physician or their attending regarding their prognosis. And I'll talk about this more later too, but if a patient is considered too sick for the PACT program, they're considered for hospice or something like that, it's just our thought process is social interventions won't really help their readmission rate. So the inpatient effort, as I said before, consists of a 75-minute comprehensive psychosocial assessment with the patient or the caregiver, depending on the patient's status. We ask a series of questions looking at 10 domains. 10 domains are primary care, specialty care, nutrition, transportation, language, housing, health literacy, substance abuse or use, their social supports, and any legal issues. Because our goal is to really look at all possible drivers of readmission, which is not something that's really been done before. We look at the patient's understanding of their illness and what their treatments are and how they're going to do and their ability to care for themselves at home. And then also we look at their degree of motivation to change behaviors. At the end of a 75-minute assessment, it's pretty easy to tell if someone's interested or not in making this, like following up with the plan that you've developed. It also includes collaboration with, as I said before, their families, friends. Their primary care physician is usually called in the community, and then the unit staff, including physicians, physical therapists, and inpatient social workers. We do not plan the discharge. The inpatient social workers still do that, but we work in collaboration with them. And as I said before, their barriers to enrollment are if their illness is severe, and then we will ask about palliative care or hospice, or their unwillingness to what we call PACT. If a patient isn't PACTing with us, then they aren't willing to do the work and aren't appropriate for the program. Then after the discharge, there's a 5-week post-discharge care coordination. Incorporates 4 of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's best practices, which are the 7 to 10-day post-discharge appointments. That's a huge driver of readmission. Most patients don't have that and subsequently readmit. So if they go to the discharge and then don't have a quick, rapid follow-up appointment. So that's one of our goals. Communication with next-level providers, including their primary care physician or their specialist, being their transitional coach, and then assessing the family caregiver as well. Initially, there's a post-discharge phone call within one business day of discharge. The only time that doesn't happen the day after discharge is that if they discharge on Friday or over the weekend. We'll always have to call them Monday. We review the discharge plans, ensure they have all their medications, necessary equipment, that follow-up appointment, and coordinate any referrals or anything like anything the patient might need in order to avoid the readmission. Continuing, for 5 weeks, there's follow-up phone calls that address problems further, accompaniments to appointments and home visits if necessary, communication between the patient and their specialist or primary care physician around their symptoms. If anything comes up, the goal is for them to talk to their doctor before it gets so bad that they have to go back to the hospital. We also communicate with their home health care's nurse in order to, again, facilitate that conversation around keeping them out of the hospital. And we collaborate with our emergency department. All PACS patients are flagged in the system, and if they do go to the emergency room, we're notified, and we can speak with the patient, the team, and their primary care physician to see if this readmission might be preventable, and that way we can develop a plan that keeps them out of the hospital. The IMA PACT Clinic, it stands for Internal Medical Associates PACT Clinic. That's our main clinic for patients in the hospital. It started a month after the beginning of PACT in November 2010. It's an enhanced medical home for patients with high readmission risk and is run by two nurse practitioners and one social worker. And patients are referred directly from the inpatient PACS social worker, and then after the five-week intervention of that social worker is over, they're continued to be followed by the PACS clinic social worker. They have the same provider at each visit, so they're not switching doctors every time getting a new resident or intern. It's an ongoing assessment. It continues after our 5 weeks is over, around new barriers that might come up and self-management of illness. And it's an open access model, which is a new thing at Mount Sinai. They're given appointment times that work for them and when they can attend. There's an enhanced telephone communication model where they're given a call back within an hour of when they call. Same day appointments as needed. So if they call us and they say, you know, I'm really not feeling well, I think I have to go to the emergency room, these are my symptoms, we can call their nurse practitioner and get them into the clinic to see if they can be treated there before so they aren't readmitted. And then the nurse practitioners also perform home visits as needed. And then finally, a year later, the PACT volunteer program was implemented. And so that we have two volunteers at all times to perform any tasks to assist our patients, and it actually allowed for a 30% increase in enrollment by the unit social or the floor social workers. So basically, the volunteers do anything that's not clinical and social, like a degree required for a social worker. It includes calling patients to check in, scheduling appointments, scheduling transportation, making runs to the pharmacy, and doing research, which is extremely helpful for us. Now I have two quick case studies to tell you about, just examples of patients we have. The first one I'll talk about is Mr. Smith. He's a 36-year-old African-American male. He was living with his mother and several adult siblings in a very small apartment in East Harlem. Didn't have any medical insurance, history of CHF, COPD, morbid obesity, gout, obstructive sleep apnea, renal insufficiency, and he was smoking about one pack of cigarettes per day. You can see his readmission history is extensive. 2010, there were no readmissions. No reason why, he just didn't go to the hospital. I enrolled him in the program in the second admission in 2011. At this point, he had no insurance because he had no ID. He had no ID because all he had was an old birth certificate, no social security card, nothing. He'd been in the DMV several times, was unable to get any help, so he couldn't then get insurance. He had no income, he kept saying was, I'm hitting roadblocks, I don't know what to do, I'm giving up. So these are the identified issues: no forms of ID, uninsured, poor nutrition, no income, difficulty attending appointments, obviously because he has no insurance and no income, and then no primary care physician or doctors of any kind. This is what we did. We provided him with a 30-day supply of his medications for after discharge, so he was able to take his medications for the first time. We also had the social work program cover his home oxygen costs, with the idea that we could backbill to Medicaid once he achieved it. So he was able to breathe at home and take his medications for the first time. I assisted the patient in applying for Charity Care, which is a sub-insurance program at Mount Sinai for uninsured and undocumented patients so that they can attend their appointments. And then referred him for primary care to the IMA PACT clinic, so we had a primary care nurse practitioner, and also to a cardiologist at the heart failure clinic. So those were the immediate things. After that, performed several home visits to assist him in acquiring the required documentation to obtain his state ID. In New York, it's extremely difficult. You have to have, if there's a point system, you have to have so many forms of ID to actually get an ID. So that actually then required me to accompany him to the DMV and basically vouch for him as a social worker so he could get it. So luckily that worked out. Then we got him, I'll skip to the next one, but we were able to assist him in applying for Medicaid and food stamps and then referred him for medically appropriate home-delivered meals. There's a great program in New York that you can have their doctor fill out a form and they send, it's like Meals on Wheels, except it's low sodium, low cholesterol, whatever they need to, and what they should be eating. So that his last admission was that February admission in 2011. He hasn't been back since. He's going to all his appointments. He's doing really well. And this is an example of an extremely motivated patient, but that's kind of what this work can do. And then the second patient I'm talking about is Mrs. Jones. She's an 83-year-old Hispanic female, Spanish-speaking only, which is quite common in East Harlem, living with her adult daughter. She had Health First, Medicare, and Medicaid, so those are managed Medicaid programs in New York. Her medical history, heart failure, coronary artery disease, vascular disease, hypertension, and then end-stage renal disease on hemodialysis 3 days a week. She had, in about 2.5 months, she had no readmissions or admissions before this, but in 2.5 months, she had 6 readmissions to the hospital. And by the time I met her during that last admission, her daughter was just, her daughter worked during the day, but was having to take weeks and weeks off to take care of her mother, was at the, kind of at the end of her rope, didn't know what to do, and just wasn't educated at all on all the benefits that she could get through the insurance. So identified issues, language. Doctors were addressing the daughter, not the patient, so the patient really wasn't sure what was going on. And then if she's home alone all day, she doesn't know what to eat or how to take her medications or anything like that. Caregiver stress with her daughter, confusion about medication both with the patient and the daughter. The patient had difficulty sleeping. For people with heart failure, they have a really difficult time breathing when they're lying down. So they, a lot of times you'll hear they have to sleep with pillows propped up, or a lot of patients sleep sitting in chairs because they can't, it's hard to breathe lying down. She had difficulty attending appointments because she was so weak and sick herself. It was hard for her to take a cab. Her daughter would have to carry her. She didn't know about transportation services available to her. No primary care physician, again. A lot of patients who are on dialysis, because they're going to appointments 3 days a week, they don't like to go to other appointments. They don't register with a primary care physician because of that. And then poor nutrition. So, again, kind of the same plan we developed. I referred her daughter and the patient for medication and nutritional education. Now, that can be done inpatient at Mount Sinai, which is really helpful. We consulted with the medical team and the social worker and ordered a medical bed for the patient. So she was able to have the electronic medical bed to move her. It's something that simple, she was able to sleep at night. We referred her again for the same program, the home-delivered meals, and to the IMA PACT clinic. We communicated with her nurse in her, for her home care, and we were able to get her a home health aide while her mom, or her sister, her daughter was at work during the day. So this is in New York, Medicaid will cover a home health aide for however many hours are needed. And then we acquired her transportation to and from her appointments covered by Medicaid, so she was able to get to those. And we communicated with her cardiologist about her difficulties attending appointments. I didn't mention this before. Her cardiologist only saw patients on the day she had dialysis. And so she was never seeing her cardiologist at all. So we were able to get him to open up another window of time. So really quickly, our outcomes. We enrolled 844 patients that made it through the program. Some patients were enrolled but were, had to be disenrolled because of death or illness, you know, extreme illness or anything like that. All of our patients, before they were in PACT, they had 952 admissions, and that was down to 546 after the program, so it's a 43% reduction in readmissions. The emergency room visits were cut by 54%, which is huge. Appointments, patients that had a 7 to 10 day appointment were at 91%, and 84% were attended. And then finally, the patients that made it through the program within 30 days after their graduation, 83% had no readmissions. 60 days later, 72% still had no readmissions. And 90 days, 66%. So with all these social interventions, it's really making a big difference and could, we think, is like a great program for hospitals nationwide. So that's all.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned health literacy as one reason.
How do you address that?
Through our work, we've become all very familiar with illness. I work on the heart failure unit, so I know a lot about heart failure. So discussing with the patient their understanding of their illnesses is, and talking about medications and things like that, if I get a patient that doesn't really understand what medications they're taking or their symptoms, then we refer to the appropriate program. So that's what, by health literacy, just their understanding of their health.
Of their own.
Of their own. Mm-hmm. It's all of that. All patients, obviously, who don't speak English as their first language should be having a translator. And the medical team, a lot of times they'll just say, oh, I understand, and they don't understand just because they don't want to cause problems. Doctors come in and they just start talking a lot of times. They don't really wait and see what the patient needs. Every patient is different, basically. And that's why I think our program works, because it's not, you know, a one-size-fits-all. So. Okay.
I have.
Yes, we've gotten in the past 3 or 4 months, we have received several grants from the government and different things, and now we went from 4 social workers, we're at 35 now. We just kicked off the new start in September, so it's been a lot of training and stuff like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
That was
the there.
That we don't know. No, because we stopped following them after 5 weeks, and so not. And usually we try to make sure that transition is smooth, and the patients are always aware it's a transitional program, not a long-term program. And patients who do come back, and that we're aware of. If I have a patient who is a graduate of 3 months ago, and they readmit and I see that they're there, I'll reassess them for further enrollment in the PACT program. But that 844 number was individual patients. So.
I want to say I loved your presentation.
Thank you.
It helped a lot. Earlier in your talk, you discussed the issue of PACTing.
We came up with that term, but it's basically if a patient is, you're not going to have an impact on the patient if they're not also willing to meet you halfway and do the work. I've had patients where I am picking up to them to appointments and bringing them to appointments, and they're still, you know, getting them home-delivered meals that they're not eating and getting them their medications that they're not interested in taking. And that's the kind of patient that we said is not PACTing. And so if that's a continued pattern, and obviously after, you know, we meet with our supervisors, we discuss it, and then sometimes those patients are disenrolled because you're doing a disservice to the other patients that are willing to do the work, then, so, that's the PACTing we came up with. That's kind of corny, but.
Just to follow up on that, what is the PACTing, how many patients do you
think? Before, I was enrolling about 4 a week, and now because the new program is bigger and our volunteer program actually expanded too, people are rolling 6 to 7 a week. So they're up to, I think, like 30 to 35 patients, which is a lot, and I feel like it's a lot, but they're making it work, so.
Yeah, it's a lot because we have such intense case management.
Yeah.
To supply.
Mm-hmm. And there's a wider range. You'll have really intense patients and then patients that don't need a lot of case management, so.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.